Everybody, welcome into the Cubs Weekly Podcast presented by Wintrust, proud legacy partner of the Chicago Cubs. Tony and Drake here, joined by Andy Martinez and special guest Ryan Sweeney. Ryan, thanks for joining us here.
Absolutely, no problem. Thanks for having me.
So, Cubs are in San Diego. We're recording this before the series finale here, but let's talk about the game, Monday's game. It was a tough loss for sure, but Ryan, we'll start with you. I mean, first thoughts on the way Monday's game played out, but then the Cubs responded well Tuesday, and you know, kind of just overall how you start out a West Coast trip in a tough fashion.
Yeah, I think the most impressive thing was with me was the Cubs bouncing back the next day, right, and winning 5-1. So it was one of those things, and I thought they would come out with a little bit of a chip on their shoulder, right? They, hey, we lost that game, and I think as a team you feel bad, but you even feel more bad, if that's a word, for Javier Assad, right? They pitched really, really well. They were trying to get one extra inning out of him, then just gives up that homer. Then you're down 8-2. You still think you have that W where you just came off that series where you won 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers. So you want to keep the momentum going. And ultimately, it was just the bullpen that couldn't really lock it down, and you lose 9-8.
I was going to say, Craig Counsell, after the game on Tuesday, mentioned, like, at the end of the day, it counts as one win in the record book,
sure.
And it counts as one loss. But those on either end, right, Monday and Tuesday, they definitely feel a little bit more different than just, like, the one, right?
Yeah, I think especially when you're playing against, hey, maybe if it was a team that they were, look, you're expected to win every game, but if it was a team that you were expected to win, like you were playing Colorado during that, you'd have been like, okay, we really let that one get away. But you see the guys in this lineup of San Diego when we talked in the beginning of the series that they really haven't gotten hot yet, and that was that game that's why I think it was even more impressive yesterday that the Cubs held them off 5-1 to where they didn't let them come back, hey, now they can try to win the series here tonight to get 2 out of 3.
Yeah, and I mean, I think if you just look at the history, it was the worst loss in the Cubs for 22 years, you know, going back to 2002 and the White Sox. Like, yes, there's that, but at the end of the day, I mean, I think that is a good point. It is just one. It's very early in April. So, I mean, Ryan, from a player's perspective, like, one, I guess, do you remember some of your worst losses of your career? You played for a bunch of different teams, but we were talking about it before. Do you remember some
couple
of these?
Bad teams too? No, but we were talking about it last night, and I told Cole, I was like, you know, I obviously played for the A's, so there was probably some pretty bad losses in there, but none that stuck out, you know, particularly in my mind. So we had the research team do it, and we looked it up, and out of all things, it was in the 2012 Red Sox team. We were up, what was it, 9-0 against the Yankees and ended up losing 15-9. So it's one of those where I honestly don't really remember that game. It's one of those things where you kind of try to erase it from your mind. So I was telling you guys, like, I kind of remember the games where, hey, like, remember that 15-inning game we won by one run, or remember that 17-inning game where you played long and you might. So you remember those, but as a player, I think if you would ask this Cubs team, at the end of this week, do I remember it? Yes. At the end of the year, maybe even, like, hey, we should have probably, if they win tonight, swept that series. But I think as a player, it's just, like Ian Happ and those guys have been saying, it's 162. You kind of just turn the page, and like Craig Counsell, it's one game in the broad spectrum of the season, and the NL Central is playing good right now, but we'll see where the dust settles towards the middle of the year.
So how do you do that though, as a player, as individually, but as a group too, where like you know you're supposed to flush it, but you're human, and it's like, okay, we had an 8-0 lead, we were going to start a West Coast trip off hot. It didn't go down the way, you know, and then even the home run by Tatis in the bottom of the eighth as well. Like, how do you turn the page? How do you make sure that it doesn't snowball?
Well, I would think it would be one thing if the team was playing bad.
Yeah.
Right? And you were like, oh,
here
man,
we go again.
Here we go again.
Yeah.
We lost 9-8.
Yeah.
Like, geez, I mean, what do we got to do? We can't catch a break. But the team's playing really well right now. So it's one of those things where I think, okay, that was just a fluke. They came in, crossed through three fastballs, sliders, whatever, didn't matter where it was, San Diego was ambushing and going after them, and it just kind of was that snowball effect where nobody could get anything going. And then, of course, when you got a runner on in the ninth inning, or the eighth inning, top of the eighth, I should say, and then, you know, Fernando Tatis Jr. hits the homer, it's like that he lives for those big moments, so you kind of not expected that to happen, but Adbert left a slider out over the middle of the plate. But as a player, I mean, I think there's so many guys, they're doing well as a team, but there's so many guys doing well individually too, that you're kind of more focused on what's my approach at the plate, or how am I going to get guys out on the mound.
Go ahead, Andy.
I was going to say, like, to that point, when you're having success, how is that easier when you're having good times or when you're having bad times to just be able to say the next day, like, all right, new day. Let's get to work.
Well, because you know that you're feeling good, right? When you mm-hmm. when you show up to the ballpark, it's one thing. It's like it's a weird feeling when I can't speak for the pitchers, but it's a weird feeling as a hitter when you feel like, man. And I'm not singling him out by any means, but Nico right now in the batter's box, like yeah. he's putting together good at bats. He's having good swings. Even yesterday, you saw him shoot it the other way on the hole, and there's just the guys playing there. Yeah, he's just not getting any knocks right now. So, one, you could get frustrated, but I was listening to Ian Happ this morning on the radio. He was talking about, you know, Nico has started off so hot every year, or you come to expect of him hitting all the time, that, like, he's scuffling a little bit right now. Like, he'll eventually come out of it. But it's one of those things where, look, you have to have a short-term memory in baseball, and when the season is so long, you can't just look at little sample sizes.
And I think, too, going back to your point, the offense was good. They scored yeah. 8 runs. You know, they had 2 4-run yeah. innings. Like, a lot of different guys contributed. You know, it wasn't like one guy hit a grand slam and another guy hit a grand slam. It was like a team-wide mm-hmm. 1-9 effort. Javier Assad had a great start, so you can feel good about it. You know, Jose Cuas, like, got ambushed. There was really yeah. 3 straight pitches that to start that inning. You know, and then Edward Alzolay, like, the fact that he's blown 2 of his first 3 saves, I'm sure he's not feeling very good about it. But it's also Fernando Tatis Jr. Like, yeah. that guy is one of the single best players in baseball. So mm-hmm. at the end of the day, I feel like from myself watching it and just kind of understanding it, like, I didn't go into, like, Tuesday thinking, oh, this team is not going to win. No. Like, they're going to carry that over. And it feels a little bit like just because how they're playing well, it does feel a little bit like Council, and I feel like he kind of like turns the page and stuff well mm-hmm. on that. But Ryan, just overall, what have your impressions been so far of Craig Council? We're only 2 weeks into this season mm-hmm. here, but what have you thought about the way he's done and managed this club?
Yeah, look, I'm impressed. I mean, look, you can critique things on what a manager does, like should he brought Adbert in to get the 5-out save, you know, or should he pulled guys out when they maybe you shouldn't have. But look, he has a reason for that. I was actually thinking about that Ben Brown one last night where, gosh, you want to see him get one more
to get out, the win.
Right, to get yeah. his first win. But I think Craig Council, what makes him such a good manager is, like you said, he said it was one game the other day, but he doesn't just look for the next game. He's planning out, you can tell, for next week, you know, next month, like, hey, I'm going to need this guy in September, right? So we looked at yesterday with Ben Brown, like he was probably supposed to throw 60 to 70 pitches. He throws 77. You want to see him get that extra one. But Craig Council, like, kudos to him for sticking to his guns, right? And saying, like, hey, I'm not going to let this guy, I'd like to maybe see him, like, if he didn't get that next guy out, then okay, pull him. But, like, I'm not going to let this guy get to 85, 90 pitches when I know he's part of our future and he's only thrown 3 and 4 innings so far this year.
And he had a fresh reminder of how quickly it can snowball, too.
Well, right? and it's early on in the year, too. Yeah. Maybe later on in the year, like, he's built up and he's pitched.
Sure.
And that being his first start, I would have liked to see him get that confidence. But looking at the post-game interview, it looked like that built his confidence, knowing that he can pitch against a team like San Diego.
How valuable is that as a player to have that, like, forward-thinking manager that's mm-hmm. thinking about today, tomorrow, next week, et cetera, et cetera? Because I assume in the moment you're focused yeah. on, like, I'm worried about my at-bat. I'm worried about my defensive assignment this inning.
Yeah.
You're not thinking about next week. So how how nice is that from a manager to have that?
Well, it is nice. And I think, you know, in not having pitched in the big leagues, but in talking to guys in the bullpen when I played with them, like, guys want to kind of know their role, right? Like, hey, when am I going to come in? And I don't think all the roles have necessarily been defined in the bullpen, mm-hmm. but Craig Council is feeling it out. And to, you know, have that big loss 9-8 and then come back and say, you know, he went for Adbert to get the 5-out save, but then he only threw 11 pitches. So, hey, I'm going to get him back on the bump again yesterday. Boom, found his slider. Boom, get his confidence back. Yeah. So it's one of those things where, yeah, and you look at Craig Council and, you know, you have all the respect for him because he played, right? I mean, he played for a long time and he played a one World Series and he knows the ins and outs and the dynamics of what it takes to be a hitter. And then he's managed for so long that he knows how to manage his bullpen and his starting pitchers as well. So I think that confidence, you can tell that the guys, look, when you respect your manager or you respect your coach, you know, the team plays well. And I think this early on sample size, you're seeing the team trusting the process and realizing that Craig Council doesn't get too up, he doesn't get too down, he kind of stays that even keel. And trust me, I think if he needed to get heated, he probably could. I mean, we all get to that breaking point, right?
We've been talking about the bullpen a little bit. The big news this week, Julian Merriweather is going to be out. Mm-hmm. He has a rib fracture in, you know, his upper middle back. Really weird, unique pitching injury. It's back-to-back years now with Cubs pitchers having like rib issues, where I guess on the one hand you kind of take that when we see so many elbow injuries across the game. On the other hand, it's weird, and he's going to be shut down for at least 4 weeks. He may be, you know, there's no guarantee after that point. They're going to do some re-imaging. He may not even start throwing right away, but in a best case scenario, he would be, you know, start ramping up after 4 weeks. It would take him another several weeks plus rehab assignments. We're looking at June probably until Merriweather's back. So Ryan, we'll start with you. I mean, like, what do you think overall about what Merriweather's loss does to impact the bullpen, and then just kind of the way the bullpen has taken shape the first couple of weeks?
Yeah, it really, I mean, it stinks to have him out, obviously, and having had a broken rib before. I mean, I know hitting is rotation, pitching is rotation, so like you said, you err on the longer term side of things. So that is coming from a reliever last year that, you know, had 70 plus appearances. I mean, that you never want to see that. You know, I think looking at the game that was blown and then to the game yesterday, I was just looking to see who came in. You talk about Smiley, Yancy Almonte, Mark Leiter Jr., and Adibor Alzolay. Like, they all pitched yesterday. Mm-hmm. And you have Daniel Palencia, who's done well. So I think the Cubs have depth. I think if you look at it from a standpoint where, you know, you were scrambling to be like, okay, we had that bad outing, it was 9-8. We need to call somebody up and get somebody in from AAA. And I'll be honest with you, I thought they were going to maybe make a move just because the bullpen's been taxed.
Yeah.
And we saw that happen last year, where starters weren't going deep into the ball games, and then towards the end of the year, it was like, oh man, like these guys are tired, right? 70 plus appearances. And but they got guys like Hector Neris that have done that 3 years in a row. And look, I think he's going to figure it out. He's a veteran. He knows what he needs to do. But to be able to have guys like Smiley that are those veteran guys, and Mark Leiter Jr., who's been in that situation like last night where he's can be an eighth inning guy, or he can be a guy that, you know, if you have runners in the scoring position in the middle of the ball game and it's the fifth or sixth inning and you need to get somebody out, he might be your guy, even if it's a lefty, because we know about his splits.
You mentioned about like defining bullpen roles and you talked about with Merriweather's injury, how important is this time right now to kind of have guys settle into roles, whether it's someone like a Palencia or a Luke Little, that right now they might not necessarily be a leverage guy, but being able to put them in situations where maybe a month or two later they're able to be called upon in leverage situations?
Yeah, for sure. I think as a young guy, and I'm not speaking for them, I would be, I'm talking more like through a veteran standpoint, like coming over here and playing. I mean, we know that Neris is going to be a back end of the bullpen guy, but like for a guy like Little, like I'm just happy when I get into pitch, right? Like he's probably going to come in against a lefty or come in like the seventh inning or whatever it is. But yeah, for the young guys, I think you're just happy that you're in there and you're on the big league squad, right? You can tell that there's some excitement and there's some energy around being at Wrigley Field and being with this team. But then once it comes to the standpoint where, okay, I have a month or two into the season, okay, now, like, what's my role? Like, where do I see myself? And that might be, we talked about Flaherty being the bench coach. That might not be necessarily something that you go and talk to Craig Counsell about. Like, it's, you know, that he's that bridge between the players, Flaherty being he the bridge between the players and the manager. Like, hey, or even talking to the pitching coach too, like, where do you see me? How am I doing? And there's so much analytical stuff out there. They know like what the matchups are and different things like that. So it comes down to a lot like that. Look, I haven't played for like 10 years. So, you know, there's a lot of different things that go into deciding a factor of when a guy comes into the ball game. But just speaking from experience, guys like to see that. And me and Cole and I were even talking, it's good to see, you know, a regular lineup too being thrown out there pretty much every day, where you don't have one guy hitting second, the next day he's hitting eighth, and then, you know, Morel's not playing, he's in and he's out. He's like, no, it's like guys are getting defined roles in the lineup and knowing where they're at. And like I said yesterday, for Morel to, whether it's DH or being at third, like he knows he's going to be in that four hole and be that spark in the middle of the order. So guys thrive off that, knowing I'm going to be in the lineup every day.
Yeah, and I mean, I think the one thing Council has always said is like bullpen roles specifically are something that is going to be more defined as the year moves along. So Albert Alzolay has the experience closing, Neris has the experience, and so on. But these guys will continue to fill out the roles, and it'll make the job easier for Council, I think, as the season moves along, for sure. So we're going to take a quick break here on the Cubs Weekly Podcast. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about the offense and a guy like Michael Busch who's breaking out with the Cubs.
You've got the jersey, the ball cap, the foam finger. Everyone can see you're a Chicago Cubs fan from a mile away. Ready to take your look to the next level? Upgrade your wallet with an exclusive Cubs debit card, which you can get when you open a Wintrust Cubs checking account. With no monthly fees, free ATMs nationwide, and a $300 bonus when you open your account. Start showing your Cubs pride with every purchase. Sign up at Wintrust.com/Cubs. Only $100 required to open. No monthly minimum balance and no monthly maintenance fees. Member FDIC and Equal Housing Lender.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Cubs Weekly Podcast. I'm Tony Andracki, joined by Andy Martinez and Ryan Sweeney. And so let's talk a little bit about Michael Busch. He's a popular breakout pick, I think, for this team. First 2 weeks of the season, it certainly looks like it. First thing, Ryan, do you think you look like him?
There, everybody's been saying there's some resemblance.
Elise has been all over this.
Like a cousin or a brother or something like that, for sure. Like it's interesting. Yeah, I got to meet him during the rain delay on Sunday, and I was like, man, everybody's texting me that I play golf with. Like, I can kind of see it, and I'm like, you know what? I'm going down to the game on Sunday. I need to go down and meet this handsome fellow down
there. What'd you think in person? You think he does? Was it like looking in a mirror?
I mean, I can see with like the beard and like a little bit, and like, but no, it was funny. We went down there, and I was telling this to some guys, and he was like, the first thing he said to me, because Swanson had called him over because he was signing some balls for the kids, and Swanson, I was like, hey, get Busch over here. Like, we've been talking about whatever. And he comes over, and he's like, dude, I have that same exact vest. Like, next time we meet, we should wear that vest. And then like, it was so funny. So maybe there'll be a round two picture of maybe it'll look even more like
that's
we
awesome.
Wear the same outfit. But no, all around good dude. And like you said, you root for guys that are good people, and he's one of those guys. And I think, you know, he's only going to get better with the offense and playing every single day. But one thing that's really stuck out to me in not knowing him since he came over here, with him being out in LA and playing in AAA, we know the type of numbers he put up over there, but is his defense too.
Yeah.
He's been playing, and I think that's huge for the Cubs too, because look, you don't want a liability over there at first base, and we know that Cody Bellinger, we would like to keep him out in center field, but we know he can play first base, or I'm saying from Craig Counsell's standpoint. But Michael Busch, not only is he fielding his position well, the confidence that I feel like the middle infielders have in him too. Like, he made a couple really good scoops yesterday.
Yeah, I think it was Tuesday night in San Diego. Dansby had a throw, and it was a quick play, and Busch scooped it so nonchalantly, so confidently for a guy who has not really played the position in the pros. He played it more in college, but more of just like 20, 30 times in the minors before this year. So
yeah, for sure. So that's the thing that's really impressed me. It's the whole all-around game. Look, it's early on in the season, so I know he only has – you know, one homer, but he's putting together quality at bats. It seems like every night he's either getting a walk or getting a hit, and that's what you want to do early on in April until you get into May, you know, in June and later on, where you can try to, you know, start. Then you start, the weather warms up, you start getting 2-for-4, 3-for-4, 4-for-4.
The wind's blowing out a bit, you feel better.
Exactly. Yeah. So right now in April, it's like getting your timing down, weathering the storm. Hopefully you're playing in places where the weather's nice. I know they're out on the West Coast right now, so hopefully that translates into coming back and getting some warm, wriggly weather.
Andy, what stood out to you about Busch so far? I mean, for me, it's like consistency is the word that Council, Happ, and Horner have all used, but like I would agree with what Ryan was saying too. It's like consistency seems like it's there for him.
Yeah, everything that we had, the scouting report we'd always gotten on Michael Busch was like he knows his strike zone, he knows what he wants to do with the plate, and he always has a plan, and he seemingly does that. And to me, what's also been impressive is, like, I think you can see the confidence that he has just knowing that regardless of what happens, he's going to be in the lineup every single day. He's going to be playing first base. He doesn't have to worry about, well, if I have a bad game, am I going to go down to Iowa tomorrow? Like, he does not have that worry. That allows him to play a little bit more freely. That allows him to have a little bit more successful at-bats. I think that's just been allowing Michael Busch to kind of thrive early on in the situation. And it also helps that you have a really good offense around you that they're all hitting, and the pitcher might maybe overlook you because you're a rookie and doesn't really think too highly of you or something like that. Like, I think all that's the perfect storm in allowing him to have some success early on.
Yeah.
Well, no, I was just going to say, and right now, like you said, the pitcher might overlook you. You know, he's hitting whatever, seventh, eighth, whatever it is right now. Like, that helps him build that confidence to where he could be, you know, your four or five hitter a few years from now. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those things where he goes out there and proves that success. And look, I've been on both sides of that spectrum where I was an everyday starter. And then you have that doubt in your mind, like, oh my gosh, am I going to get traded? Am I going to get set down or whatever? And right now it seems like he knows that he's going to be in there every day. So that's just going to keep adding to his confidence as well.
Yeah, and I agree with you about the lineup. I do think that that's put him in a position to succeed because he has, and you brought this point up too, Ryan, earlier, is like, so you got Happ leading off for the most part against righties. They faced a bunch of righties already early this season. You got Happ leading off. You got Seiya hitting two. I love Seiya in the two spot. I think that's the best position mm-hmm. for him. Bellinger three, Morel four makes a lot of sense. Then you got Dansby, and then Bush is to kind of split up the righties. He's there. So then you have Nico, a guy who scored almost 100 runs last year, led the team in stolen bases, you know, is around 300 in average every year. Like, all of a sudden, he's your seven hitter. And like you said, yes, he's not hitting necessarily. He's not getting the results yet, but he's taking a ton of walks. And it's just kind of interesting to see the way the lineup has developed. And then you have 8 and 9 where, you know, if it's like if Nick Madrigal is playing because Morel's DHing, or, you know, if Mike Talkman's in there, Yan Gomes, Miguel Amaya, whatever it may be, it does feel to me that I look at the lineup every day. I like the consistency of it. I think the players do too. Mm-hmm. And I think there just seems to be more depth than I even thought coming into the season. Bush is a big reason why, but just in general, the way like Council has lined this up, I feel like it's setting the offense up to maximize their potential.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't even think about when you talk about the catchers, like both Amaya and Yan Gomes hitting ninth, like they can put up offensive numbers as well, but that lets them focus on, you know, when you're probably getting 3, maybe 4 at bats, that lets them focus on, you know, what they're doing with the pitching staff as well. So you can see that, you know, Yan Gomes started it off in the fifth yesterday with the homer. So it's not like, and you're getting down to Nico where he does lead off against lefties, but hits in the, you know, seventh or eighth hole against righties. So there's really not a break in the lineup, and all of them have been consistent into where, you know, they're taking walks, they're getting base hits, it's next man up. It really hasn't been relying on the long ball, right? It's not that they're playing small ball either. It's they're still, you know, getting doubles and triples, but it's Seiya Suzuki getting 3 knocks and being on base every single time, and Happ putting together good at bats. And it's like once they've been putting together a lot of innings where it's multiple runs. So it's like once they start, then they go, right? It's not like, oh, we're going to score one here, we're going to score one here. It's like, nope, we're going to score 4, and then we're going to score 4, and then we're going to score 3. So it's like they're scoring a lot of runs, and anytime they score over 5 runs, you know, you can see other than that one game, they're 6-0.
And what's impressive to me, too, about the offense is they're having consistent at-bats, which is something Craig Counsell has preached, and they're forcing pitchers to rack up their pitch counts.
Yep.
I thought the start against Musgrove on Tuesday was really impressive in the sense that, sure, they weren't putting up the runs, but they had a base runner every inning. First inning, I believe, Musgrove had 22 pitches. The next one, he had about 26 or 27, something like that. He was like at 50 pitches through 2 innings. Mm-hmm. And yes, he was getting results and he was putting up zeros, but you knew he can't keep up throwing 20 pitches an inning because his outing's going to be short. You start going into the bullpen. They did that against the Dodgers, right, where they forced the starter out after in the second inning the first day, and they went into the bullpen early each day. Like, that allows you to have success, and that really taxes a team over the coming days, right? If you go in early, or if you force a starter out early, now they're relying on their bullpen early on day one. They're going to have guys down the next day, and then the next day. It has this trickle-down effect that allows them to have success, and I think that's the most impressive thing that they've been doing that's allowing them to be a really potent offense.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so before we wrap up here on the pod, Ryan, I'm curious from your perspective. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks in, is there one hitter that stood out to you that has been a surprise just in terms of production or a plate approach or anything?
Yeah, I mean, I think everybody's been impressive to me, but I think the one guy, if I had to pick, and you said you love him in the two-hole, and so do I, is Seiya Suzuki.
Oh, yeah.
Just the way that we talk about approach, his balance at the plate, it's almost like he's such a confident hitter now, being in, having a couple years in the big leagues now, that like it's almost like when he hits an outside pitch, he's like I'm not gonna swing at that, right? Like there's no way. Like he knows his strike zone, and when he gets a pitch in the zone, and then even with 2 strikes, you know, he's aggressively hitting in the zone, and he's just you would think like, hey, maybe we should put him in the 4 or 5 hole because he does get on base and he gets a lot of hits. And his, we talked about it yesterday in the show, is that exit velo. He's hitting the ball harder than anybody too, because his bat stays through the zone so much and he drives the ball through the middle of the field. But he takes his walks as well. And he's that two hole hitter where he has the good bat control to where if Hap or whoever's leading off leads off with a double, he can shoot one the other way and you're up 1-0 really, really quick, and he can drive the ball out of the ballpark. So Seiya Suzuki for me has been the MVP so far this year. And, you know, you talk about the RBIs and driving in runs, and he's hitting in the two hole.
What about pitcher? Is there a pitcher that stood out so far to you this season through the first 2 weeks here?
Well, so yesterday, obviously, with Ben Brown making his, you know, nice start, rough start, you know, his first one, then last outing good and this outing good. But for me, I talked about him earlier, it's Mark Leiter Jr. Just because he is that dependable guy through 70-plus games last year. And Craig Counsell really, you can tell, he trusts him, like I said, to get out of jams. Had a couple, I think, rough outings in spring training, but like, okay, season started, we're getting back to the splitty, you know, guys can't hit him, runners in the scoring position, it seems like he always can somehow induce a ground ball to get a double play. So for me, it's Mark Leiter Jr. just being that lockdown guy where we talked about it earlier, that he can throw in the eighth inning, or he could come in and close the game, but he can come in the middle of the ball game as well.
All right, Ryan, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate it. That'll do it for this edition of the Cubs Weekly Podcast. Make sure you download and subscribe the Marquee Sports Network app and check out all our great content on there, including the Kosuke Fukudome interview that Elise Menaker had over the weekend, where she talked to the former Cubs outfielder about his time here in Chicago and the Japanese players that are kind of taking over Major League Baseball at this point. So thanks to everybody for tuning in.